Collectively, anxiety disorders are our most prevalent psychiatric problem, affecting about 40 million adults in the United States. In Anxious, Joseph Ledoux, whose NYU lab has been at the forefront of research efforts to understand and treat fear and anxiety, explains the range of these disorders, their origins, and discoveries that can restore sufferers to normalcy. Joseph Ledoux will be at the New York State Writers Institute on two occasions tomorrow. At 4:15, he'll be in the Standish Room in the Science Library for a seminar, and at 8 o'clock, a reading in the Recital Hall at the Performing Arts Center. Joseph Ledoux is director of the Emotional Brain Institute at NYU. Again, the name of the new book is Anxious, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
What brought you to look at fear and anxiety in this way in this book?
Well, I've been working on this general topic for, 30-something years. You know, the work has always sort of been moving more and more towards clinical issues. A lot of the work is done through animal studies and trying to understand the basic biology of what goes on in the brain during these kinds of situations. And, you know, as I studied this more and more, I began to realize that what I was studying really wasn't fear or anxiety itself, especially in animals. That, you know, in an animal, we can't really say with any degree of scientific certainty what exactly, if anything, that animal is experiencing. So it's not really a topic you can address scientifically. But more important, even in humans, what was becoming more and more apparent over the years was that the ability of the brain to detect and respond to a threat is different from the brain mechanisms that are producing our conscious feelings of fear and anxiety. So when you find yourself, you know, walking through the woods and frozen in front of a snake, that's one set of circuits that's doing that. And a separate set of circuits is giving rise to that that feeling of, oh my God, I'm going to die, that feeling of fear. And the failure to separate that has a lot of consequences. For example, anti-anxiety medications are developed through studies of animals, placing them in situations where they're challenged in some way. If you give the animal a certain medication and you find that the animal is less behaviorally timid in that situation, then the assumption is that a person will feel less anxious. But the failure of that whole paradigm is indicated by the fact that a lot of the big drug companies are pulling out of the anti-anxiety business. In 2010, the chief executive officer of GlaxoSmithKline concluded that the results had been disappointing and that the prospects for new medications was not great. So it just wasn't worth their financial investment to continue along those lines. So what was the problem? Well, the problem was they were testing the ability in the animals of the drug to affect the detection and response to threats. And if you give the drug to a person, you kind of get the same thing. So a person with social anxiety disorder will be more likely to go to the party, in other words, less behaviorally timid, but still feel anxious when they're there. So it's this misconception of the, or this confusion, I should say, of the circuits that give rise to conscious feelings with the circuits that allow an organism to detect and respond to danger. That confusion has deep consequences for the way we do the research, the way we interpret it, and the way we try to help people.
You make the point in the book that certainly with what we know increasingly about how the brain works, that new drugs will come along. But you make the point very strongly that we have to use the brain research to actually help reshape psychotherapy.
Well, I don't say we have to, but I think it's, you know, it's a resource that we have available that can inform psychotherapy. There are a number of things that have come out of laboratory studies that have been very useful over the years. You know, the entire field of psychotherapy called cognitive behavioral therapy really started out as a variation on Pavlov's procedure where, you know, Pavlov gave the dog rang the bell and gave the dog food, and so when he rang the bell, the dog would salivate. But if he kept ringing the bell without presenting the food, the dog would stop salivating. That's called extinction. And extinction became the basis of what we now call cognitive behavioral therapy. It started out first as just behavioral therapy, where you would use this, you would take the feared stimulus, say, and present it over and over again to try and weaken its impact on the person. And this, over the years, became supplemented with various kinds of cognitive treatments that overlaid the behavioral extinction process. But extinction, which came to be called exposure therapy, and that became a key part of this whole cognitive behavioral therapy thing. So, the beginning of cognitive behavioral therapy is through this animal research. But a lot that we've learned in the intervening years has helped us understand on a fundamental level how extinction works in the brain. For example, we know that if you give the trials with certain spacings in animals, the extinction process works much better. So simply by taking that information and applying it to the human extinction process in cognitive behavioral therapy, you might be able to improve the therapy. We know that when an animal or a person sleeps after learning something, they remember it better. So maybe a therapy session should be followed by a sleep session. Another thing is we know that any kind of information that you encounter after you learn something has the opportunity to interfere with what you've just learned. So to the extent that a therapy session is a learning session, if you leave the office immediately and go out into the world, things happening in the world may interfere with the kind of learning that took place during that session. So here again, the sleep session afterwards could help because it would reduce those interfering variables and might make the therapy much better. And on like this. There are a lot of just simple behavioral principles that have been picked up through laboratory studies that might be very useful in improving the therapeutic process.
Overall, for those of us reading the book and who will come to hear you speak tomorrow here in Albany, what is it that you're in the book and in your work challenging us to do to think differently about these origins of fear and anxiety? What would you like us, the takeaway to be?
I think if there was one simple takeaway message, it would be what I started out by saying, which is that the brain systems that detect and respond to danger are different from the systems that give rise to the conscious experience. Now, in our minds, those two things are correlated, but we know from scientific research that they are separate processes that, although they interact, they are separate. And the reason that's important is because we may have to develop different treatments for behavioral responses and physiological responses that come up as symptoms of anxiety disorders, different treatments for those as opposed to the conscious feelings that we also experience.
Well, the name of the book is Anxious, and Joseph Ledoux will be at the New York State Writers Institute two opportunities tomorrow, one at 4:15 in the Standish Room in the Science Library for a seminar, and then a reading at 8 o'clock in the Recital Hall in the Performing Arts Center. You can find out more information by going to the New York State Writers Institute's website. Joseph Ledoux, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program, and be wonderful having you here in Albany.
Okay, thanks a lot.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Anxious. Joseph Ledoux, neuroscientist and author, will be at the New York State Writers Institute tomorrow. You can find out more by going to the New York State Writers Institute online. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.